This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Bank Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Our email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin with Fred Dent, the financial analyst of renown. He calls Baton Rouge home, but spends much time back in his old haunt of Wall Street. And of course, he follows the markets. That's what his job's all about. And yesterday was a brutal day for stocks. Dow slid more than 600 points. And NVIDIA posted a record drop in market value as the NASDAQ tumbled by more than 3%. So it was a dreadful day. Dreadful day on Wall Street. Today is starting out rocky as well for the tech sector. But as we know, these things go in cycles, and the Fed is expected to reduce interest rates, long overdue, coming in a few weeks, and maybe times will be better in the not-so-distant future. But Fred Dent, how do you explain what happened yesterday? Okay, I think we just lost Fred Dent, who is doing it telephonically today. Usually he's in studio and he is on the road, but let's see if we can restore contact with Fred Columbus Dent. NVIDIA, which I mentioned, one of the darlings of the AI boom, had its worst percentage drop since April. It lost 9.5%. Yesterday, the company shed about $279 billion in one day. But for the year, just to show you how these things go, NVIDIA is still up 118%. So usually when a stock goes that fast, it does come back to the pack, but usually not in one day. And yesterday was a horrible day for NVIDIA and other tech related stocks. Some of the darlings like Apple and Microsoft, they didn't do very well either. And those are the three most lucrative companies in the world. They're all with market value of over $3 trillion. And we have Fred, where they're working on restoring contact with Mr. Dent. And it is always a pleasure to catch up with him once a month. And usually he's kind enough to be in studio, but he is on the road today. And tell me if we have
him. Jim, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. So, Fred Dent, tell us why you believe this is only a flesh wound.
Well, at least you heard that. When we have a 2 or 3% decline, this is kind of par for the course in a volatile season. If you go back 30 days to August 5th, we had that 5% drop precipitated by the action in Japan, and people freaked out. A lot of the data that we see now is that 401k plan participants moved from their equity holdings into cash holdings or more secure holdings within those plans. And then the market turned around and did a fantastic rise on the upside. And I think we were talking about NVIDIA, or at least you were mentioning that recently.
Yeah, I was
NVIDIA,
mentioning it.
Yes, is...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No.
NVIDIA is down in the last 5 days 17%, but it's up 122% so far year to date. I mean, these little blips, ups and downs, you can't forecast them. They're going to happen, and the last thing you want to do is get whipsawed by them.
And it's the old axiom, buy low, sell high. Is this a good time? I know you don't like getting into it, but we got a question last month. Now, for years, Apple just went up, 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 and it's still going up, but not as much as it once did on a percentage basis. But these hot stocks like NVIDIA, invariably they come back to the pack. We've seen it with Tesla up and down and all over the place. But long-term, which is what you're all about, long-term, would you recommend it?
Would I recommend Apple or NVIDIA?
Well, any of them, but NVIDIA in particular.
Well, the artificial intelligence boom is here. It's going to change our lives. NVIDIA is at the forefront. The reason the stock is selling off is because they've announced a little bit of a slowdown in the production of their latest chip. I would not encourage people to speculate on individual stock holdings. You may get lucky and do well, or you could come in at the last minute right before it tops. There is a gentleman that I know from a local supermarket who bought NVIDIA many years ago at a very low price, and he's sitting in the catbird seat right now with his holdings. As a matter of fact, he's going to retire because of that single stock, but that's more the exception than the rule.
Yeah, and our friend Andy Anderson's always looking for the NVIDIAs of the world, and I suspect that's in his portfolio. And And by the way, when we went on the air just a few moments ago, NVIDIA was down a couple of percent, and to show you how things can happen, it's now in green territory. It is slightly up. So we'll see what happens the rest of the day. But as you know, Fred, in one day, a stock can go up 5% or down 5% and then finish even. It happens that way sometimes.
Downturns will be followed by upturns. You cannot time the market or the economy. Good luck with that. And the plan is to stay invested.
And that's what you're all about. And you believe stocks are, say, a better investment long-term, and I guess that's why you're in the business, than real estate. And unlike real estate, you don't have this big asset that you have to, you don't have to water the grass when it comes to holding Apple or some stock like that. Why do you think it's a better mousetrap to invest in the markets than in other ways?
Well, there are liquidity features to being invested in the public markets over, say, holding real property. But there are ways to invest in real estate that are liquid. For example, real estate investment trusts. These are publicly traded companies that own real estate as the underlying asset. They produce nice dividends. I have nothing against owning an investment like that, nor do I have anything against owning real property. There is a liquidity premium, though, that that factors into it with physical property.
Now, the other night, I know some LSU fans, those were watching on DirecTV, they lost the signal right before the game. That's a Disney thing, and some folks are not happy with Disney, who has this relationship with, of course, cable companies across the country. But Disney stock is up. Thank you very much. Sometimes things that seem very big in our little world or just blips on the radar elsewhere. But to show you how these techs, those three big ones, NVIDIA, Apple, and Microsoft, their market capital is about $10 trillion collectively. And that's why some people say, why get juiced up about a $35 trillion deficit when you got three companies worth $10 trillion? So is that comparing apples and oranges, Fred Dent?
Yes, it is, because the conversion from those companies to pay off the debt would never happen and would require some significant tax changes. Although one of our presidential candidates is proposing, among other things, a 25% capital gains tax on unrealized gains. And how that's going to be pulled off, I don't know, because then you're going to have to be selling things and then pay more capital gains. And the administrative function of regulating that will require a huge bureaucracy, as well as maybe a windfall for CPAs.
Well, and I think many times politicians, like journalists, do not know economics very well. And they say things like Trump and tariffs, for example. And Harris, as you note, she wants to tax the rich, but that has repercussions. But if you're going to tax, there is this huge gap in American assets right now. Wouldn't it seem better to tax those who are well off than those who are less off?
That is a political question. And as I've said on this show before, that the first law of politics is to throw out all the laws of economics. And look, there are harebrained schemes on both sides. Even the Trump tariffs would amount to, whether it's 10% or 20%, would be a sales tax of 10 or 20%, because those tariffs will be passed on to us, the consumers. So you choose your poison. And then again, the odds of these things passing will also be determined by what kind of Congress makeup we end up with.
Well, and for those who want to be well off, and I think most everybody would like to be well off, the quickest way to do that is through the market. And surprisingly, in a country that is the richest country in the world, with now over 330 million people, of those 330 million, and in places like California, for example, if you own your house, you're a millionaire. Surprisingly, I was looking this morning with my friend Don Nelson. We were talking about this. There are only 23 million millionaires in the country, 23,716,000. That's a number that was lower than I anticipated, Fred. And I know you certainly want to make people millionaires, but most people in this country, they live they live on a pretty tight budget because they do not have the options that some others do. And in stocks, if you do it well, can give you flexibility.
Yes, they can. But the truest way or the fastest way to create wealth in the United States is by creating a business, by creating or improving upon a good or a service that people want and need, and satisfying that need and growing a business around that. That's the way most wealth is created in the United States.
Well, Fred Dent, it's always...
And by the way...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
If I have another moment, if you have a net worth of over $1 million, you're in the top 1% of the global wealth pyramid. So you would have a lot to be grateful for.
Yes. And it's grateful that we talk with you every month. And we'll be back with Fred next month. And we'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Renee Martin and Robin Dow are producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. 62 days away from the November 5th election. The betting odds in Las Vegas as of this morning to win the election: Trump 49.6, Harris 49.2. In the swing states, all seven of them are within the margin of error. And in those, Donald Trump leads in two of them. Kamala Harris leads in four, and one is tied. Harris has now pulled ahead in Nevada by 0.6%. This is a compilation of polls, and she's also ahead in Georgia by 0.1. That's as close as it gets. So all of these are certainly changeable in 62 days. And pollsters have told me that Donald Trump, in the last two cycles, he lost the overall vote handily both times against Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, but he won one election in the Electoral College. So even though he's down overall by a point or two to Harris in national polls collectively, he could still win in the Electoral College, and he would be the first president ever to lose the overall vote three times. But also, he underpolls a little bit, 1 or 2%. And as we can see, 1 or 2% could be what changes the inertia and decides the outcome of an election. 877-217-5757. And one of those issues that is front and center is abortion. A story today, a push to ask Arizona voters to add a right to abortion in the state constitution took on new stakes this week when Arizona Supreme Court ruled that the state can enforce a ban on abortion in all stages of pregnancy. And Arizona is one of several states where abortion rights are on the ballot. Voters in seven states, California, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan, Montana, Ohio, and Vermont, have sided with abortion rights supporters on ballot measures. And Donald Trump, who, of course, is all over the place on this issue, has all but said he will vote for abortion rights in Florida. But if you're choosing between him and Kamala Harris and you're, quote, pro-life, I would imagine if that's your issue, if that's your major issue, where else do you go? And with us to talk about this issue and its relevance is Tara Wicker, who works with the Louisiana Family Forum, former Metro councilperson, mother of a number of children, but who's been with us a few times and told us that despite being the mother of six kids, she had an abortion when she was very young and regrets doing so. And she is now a champion of abortion restrictions. And this issue is something that is relevant in American life, Tara Wicker, and your thoughts about why you believe this this issue is important not only to you but to many others, not only in a red state like Louisiana, but in other places across the country.
Thanks, Jim. I think, you know, back to our earlier conversations before, I think that it comes down to the basic human rights of a person to live. I don't think that at any point in time we should have the right or the opportunity to determine the value of a human being's life, whether it's stage of development, location, any of those things. And I just have a firm belief that that we have to uphold the rights of the most vulnerable of our society, which are babies in the womb.
877-217-5757. Do you think this is the most important issue?
I think that it has been an issue that's been used, unfortunately, you know, as a pawn. I think it's an issue that has been intentionally, in many aspects, slammed with misinformation, misguided agendas, and it's just been used. And so it's really unfortunate because at the core of it is talking about the right of a human being to live. And so for us to use that as a political pawn to kind of gain votes one way or the other, I think it's very, just very wrong at the core of who we are as a human race.
I think many on the conservative side have used this issue effectively, and Donald Trump certainly is a darling of the evangelicals, largely because he was responsible for Roe v. Wade being overturned, despite the fact that he has more divorces than all the other presidents in the United States put together. He has obviously been unfaithful to two wives. He's consorted with people who might not be considered good housekeeping companions, but he is loved by the evangelicals. Why do you think that's the case?
You know, I can't speak for anyone else. I know that, you know, it's difficult because when you're all over the place, at some point in time, I think you got to be able to staunchly make a decision. You know, which side are you going to stand on? And when it comes to the issue of life, you can't vacillate between two opinions. And I think it all comes down to a person's character. What do they stand for? I can't stand for something one day and then tomorrow I change my mind. You know, that just reeks of instability. But at the end of the day, I think the boldness and the courage of a candidate to stand up and say, you know, no, I believe that life, you know, starts in the womb of a mother, and stand for that and be unapologetically firm in that is what really the conservatives are, you know, possibly looking for. And I think that their hope was that was going to be, you know, the case with Donald Trump, because he started out sort of in that space of being very unapologetic and saying that I'm going to do this, helping to overturn Roe versus Wade, which after 50 years of murdering millions and millions of babies, you know, America was able to stand on the right side of that issue. So I think the hope in that case was, let's continue in this space and make a sure stance that we are a pro-life country.
877-217-5757. But ballot measures have shown that this is a complex issue, and in places that are red states, ballot measures on abortion have not done as well as many thought they would. Kansas and Kentucky, for example, Montana, those are not states that will vote for Kamala Harris come November 5th, but they sided with abortion rights supporters, and the inertia has changed. The conservative evangelicals had this issue for a half century, and now the liberals have it, and they're capitalizing on it, and it may end up swaying the election one way or the other. We'd like your input. 877-217-5757. We're visiting with Tara Wicker, born and raised in Mid-City Baton Rouge, the First Lady of Lighthouse Christian Fellowship, and has been married for 30 years to pastor and former state trooper and business owner Michael Wicker, mother of six, but she has acknowledged she had an abortion, which shaped her opinion on this issue very early in life. How old were you, Tara?
How old am I? Or how
I know,
old
how
was
old
I?
Were you when you had your abortion?
I was 16 years old, very uninformed, very unsupported, had absolutely no idea of what I was walking into and what was going to happen to me on the other side of those doors of that abortion clinic. It is something that has caused me just trauma for years. I went silent for 30 years, not telling anyone what had happened. And it was just, it was very, very traumatic. And I think that becomes part of why I do what I do, because I don't want any other young lady to walk into that. You know, the statistics show us that over 60% of the women that have abortions are coerced to have them. It's not necessarily something they want to have, but without support, without the right kind of community around them, without the kind of right options that are presented to them, many of them feel like they're hopeless and they're in a state where I don't know what to do. And then with the coercion of individuals saying, well, maybe you should just go and have an abortion, they're led to murder their babies in the womb. So, but the trauma that exists after that is what people oftentimes don't talk about, because the only way as a woman that you can reckon with murdering your baby in your womb is to assume that it's not a human being, because no person in their rational minds would say, I'm okay with just murdering a human being. So you have to formalize in your mind, well, maybe that's not human, which at the end of the day, you know, nothing becomes more human by getting older or bigger. It's human from the beginning. And so I think that becomes the difficulty there.
Okay, we do have to take a break, but we will return with Tara Wicker, and our first caller will be Rebel in Sherwood. And Tara has opined. Now the question is whether a two-week-old fetus is a baby. Is that really something that is worth preserving at all costs? We'll... This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Renee Martin, Robin Dow are producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're spending a few more minutes with Tara Wicker, who is affiliated with the Louisiana Family Forum and is an avid anti-abortion activist, and she is here talking about why she believes this is one of the seminal issues of 2024, as it has been since 1973. 877-217-5757, and Donald Trump, who was responsible for three anti-abortion justices being appointed to the Supreme Court, is now saying pretty much that he's pro-choice. He says, I'll be the best president ever for reproductive rights. But will that mean that people who have been evangelicals and highly supportive of him will go for Kamala Harris? Or maybe not vote? Or maybe vote for somebody else? What are your thoughts about the relevance of this in the 2024 presidential election? 877-217-5757. Rebel in Sherwood, you're on with Tara Wicker. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you so much, Jim. And thank you, Ms. Wicker. I'm really disappointed to hear you, the way you describe this. I read a study, I guess it was like the second anniversary of the overturning of Roe, which clearly stated that at least 65,000 women and girls in red states have been forced to carry their rapist babies. Also, it seems to me that this country, there were also thousands of cases of medical emergencies where women needed treatment and could not get it. It seems to me that the country already had this debate, and people like you lost to have the right to tell other people or dictate to other people how to live their own lives.
All right. Thank you, Rebel. Tara, would you respond to Rebel in Sherwood?
Sure. I think it just goes back to who's speaking up for the rights of that baby that's in the womb. You know, at the end of the day, that's a live, living human being. And I'll kind of, you know, back into that conversation. There are laws currently on the books that require, if a woman's life is in jeopardy, that they're required by law to make sure that mother is cared for and she receives the proper care for both her and that baby that's suffering. So to say that, you know, oh, you're going to force somebody to have something that's going to cause them some medical issues is just not factual. There are laws on the books that prevent that. The other thing is when you have the conversation about carrying, you know, the rapist baby, at the end of the day, our laws need to be able to deal with the babies, with the rapist, because right now you are punishing the baby for the sins of the father. What did the baby do in that instance? And so nobody.
Well, aren't you also punishing a mother who would perhaps want to have the pregnancy ended?
Studies have shown, Jim, that furthering the trauma, because no one talks about the trauma of abortion. It's not like you just get up from that easily. There's a gaping hole that is left in a woman when she has to go through the trauma. The abortion is very violent. And so when you add on top of a rape an additional trauma of abortion, what you're doing is further traumatizing.
Well, I would think it might be trauma having a kid who's the product of a rapist, too. And look, now there are many people who agree with you that pro-life is the right way. It's the godly way, if you will. But shouldn't that decision be made by you rather than by your congressman, who usually is a male who would never be put in this position? Why do they have more standing than the person who is actually carrying the, quote, child?
Well, you have to answer this question. If there's a difference, we just had a commercial where somebody got in trouble for strangling a fawn. But let's take it to a child. If you have a 2-year-old kid, Jim, and if the mother decides, well, you know, my economic situation is terrible, I can't really afford to have this kid, it was a horrible decision, and she strangles and murders that baby, she's gonna go to jail.
Well, as she should. It's not the same in the views of most people with a 2-week or 2-month-old fetus. It's not the same as strangling or a 2-year-old child. And your colleague, Jean Mills, he's fully in favor of the death penalty. That's murder. It's murder at the hands of the state. How can you be pro-death penalty and anti-abortion?
When you talk about the life of an innocent child, and I think the point that we differ in is that you're seeing the stage of development of a 2-year-old child different from the stage of the development when the baby's in its womb. If you admit that that baby is not human, which biologically and by DNA factors we know it's a human, then how do you make the difference of the value of the 2-year-old versus the value of the baby that's, you know, in its mother's womb, unless you say it's not a baby?
Well, it's a life, but it's not a life that can exist outside the womb. At 2 months, it's not thinking and speaking and doing things that a 2-month or 2-year-old would do, and you know that. James and Metairie.
But at what
James,
point does that become?
Well, okay, James. Good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Tara Wicker.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. Good morning, your guests. So pleased to see Kamala Harris having her reproductive freedom van going around the country.
Kamala, by the way, not Kamala.
James, I mean, Jim, I am sorry, it is Kamala. Kamala. Reproductive freedom to include access to birth control, including birth control pills, IVF, almost unfettered IVF, and abortion. Now, IVF, it's impossible. If pro-life people promote the absurd, insane idea that a human embryo is a child, that is totally crazy. Thank you.
But it is a life. It's in my view, is not the life that Tara Wicker is expressing, but I don't think it can just be discarded casually either. But I think that should be the choice of the mother, not of Congressman Graves or Congressman Higgins or any member of the U.S. Congress,
Jim,
or any Supreme Court justice for that matter.
But Jim, you can't make that decision based on the value of a life. Who gives anybody the right to decide at what point my life becomes valuable?
Well, you do it with capital punishment. Are you in favor of capital punishment?
When you look at the death penalty, those are individuals that are on death row because they've committed a crime.
And some of them have been executed wrongly.
What crime?
So what happens when you make a mistake? You've certainly
That's
killed.
That's horrible, and there should be retribution paid. And
well, you can't bring the person back. They're not going to live.
Yeah, but you can't compare that to
yes,
a baby
you can.
And the
you,
wound.
Look, if you're pro-life, you can't be high test and low test. You got to be one way or the other, I would think.
But one is innocent and one is not.
One is innocent,
the baby
but
didn't commit a crime.
Well, sometimes there's this thing called rehabilitation. People commit murder and get out of jail and live normal lives.
And, you know, I think one of the things that we do need to be fighting for is, you know, start putting the rapists on death row. If that's what you want to do, you want to make sure. But again, don't punish the baby for something that a rapist did, because that baby's life. You have so many people, Jim, that have been born out of rape situations that have made tremendous achievements and accomplishments in this community.
Well, aren't many conservatives and some people on the left side as well. They're pro-life until the moment of birth, and then it's like you're on your own. We're not going to help you pass.
I agree with you on that in terms of the fact that you can't be pro-life and just be pro-birth. As you know, I'm a co-director for Louisiana Black Advocates for Life. That's the organization that I work for, and intentionally we go out to make sure that moms and babies and families have support in a community around them, which again I didn't have, to make sure that when they're faced with those kind of situations that they can make viable, you know, we've opened up My Baby's Closets to help moms that feel like they can't afford to take care of their babies. We provide them with clothing and diapers and formula and everything that they need, because you're right. Once that baby is here, that baby still has to live and thrive. And you cannot be pro-life and only can be concerned about getting the baby here. I totally agree with you on that.
Okay, Trish in Grand Coteau, you're on with Councilwoman Wicker.
Good morning, good morning. I'm a little confused that she is choosing to support something that can't live over the life of a woman. And really, illegal abortion is forced pregnancy. You are forcing a woman against her will, and maybe against the partner in the crime, so to speak, against his will. You are forcing them to do something they don't want to do, forcing them.
Well, women have abortions, but there are very few people. Donald Trump's even changed on this. At one point, he was calling for sanctions against the woman who would have an abortion. Would you think that would be a good way to thwart abortion if the woman who had an abortion were to go to jail? Tara?
The laws right now, you know, do not allow for a woman to be criminalized if she seeks out an abortion. The reality of it is, in many cases, as I mentioned, that percentage of over 60% of them that are coerced to do it, they become victims just as much as those poor little innocent babies. And so what we should do, though, is go after those folks that are performing the abortions and that are providing these illegal abortion pills, that has a woman in a hotel room taking a pill that causes her to have an abortion while she's in that hotel room, you know, alone or whatever, without any support and care. Yeah, those folks definitely need to be charged.
All right, Craig in Natchitoches, you're on with Tara Wicker.
Yeah, good morning, Ms. Wicker. Kind of to show the hypocrisy of the Republican Party, they're pro-life when it comes to unborn babies, yet they don't seem to care about once they get into school and get shot up by these shooters with these automatic machine guns and stuff. They won't pass any gun control laws to protect kids once they get older.
All right. Well, what about these kids are blown away by high-powered assault weapons that are available to deranged, usually young white men, mm-hmm. who walk in schools and kill people by the tens and sometimes more than that. Tara, is that something that also is a pro-life issue?
I don't think it's a pro-life issue. I mean, you have to understand the value of life, you know. And I'll say this on one side or the other: guns don't kill people; people kill people. And so you got to be able to make sure that you have a understanding of what's going on in people's minds. Back to the original comment, those things happen because there's not a support
system.
Okay,
we got to roll. But thank you so much for joining us today, Tara Wicker. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for staying with us, and we're pleased to have joining our show Emily Wax Thibodeau, a great name. She could be from Louisiana, but she is a graduate of Rutgers and Columbia and is a national staff writer for the Washington Post, who covers the issue of abortion, among others. But she is with us to talk about a story about abortion that she has penned that is in the current Washington Post: A Louder Voice in Fighting Abortion Bans Men in Red States. So now there are men in states like Louisiana who are speaking out on this issue. And Emily Wax Thibodeau, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And I think you're the first people to pronounce Thibodeau the right way in a long time.
well, you're Thibodeau.
I'm married.
E-A-U-X, but you've got a name that you could easily be from Louisiana, and you've done some reporting.
That's my husband's name.
Not too far from here. You were in Mississippi, and your story starts this way. Thomas Stovall grew up in a strict Baptist family in Mississippi and always believed that anyone involved with abortion was destined for hell. But his lifelong conviction crumbled when his wife, Chelsea, was 20 weeks pregnant with their third child. Tests showed a severely malformed and underdeveloped fetus, one that was sure to be stillborn if carried to term. There was other devastating news. Continuing with the pregnancy could threaten Chelsea's health and future fertility. The couple now live in Arkansas, which has a near total ban on abortion and is surrounded by states with their own highly restrictive laws. So they drove 400 miles to reach a clinic in Illinois where they could end the pregnancy. As they did, Stovall says he decided he was dead wrong about abortion being a sin. He began knocking on doors, hoping to change other men's minds and help get an abortion measure on the state ballot this fall. Now, is that experience unique to Thomas Stovall, or do you find that this is something that is, shall we say, picking up steam and others are sharing his point of view?
So I think, well, first, I wasn't in Mississippi, but I did spend quite a lot of time on the phone getting their stories. So I just wanted to be clear on that. Right. And they were very open to talk about it, I think, because what's happening now is doctors are afraid to use what they say is the same coding for a miscarriage as it is for an abortion. So women would know that, you know, when you're miscarrying, sometimes you can bleed out and it could cause other very serious complications, like not being able to have kids, or you could even die. So what the doctors would do is what is coded in the medical, in all hospitals, as a spontaneous abortion, which means your body is trying to get the pregnancy over with because it's going to be a painful one. Doctors in many red states are really cautious and nervous about criminalization. In other words, if they do this procedure, they'll go to jail or lose their license. So they've been weary of doing it and haven't been doing them. When there are many hundreds of cases right now in the U.S., some are lawsuits where husbands have been advocating for their wives who are in pain, you know, all over Florida. I've heard of cases. I interviewed people in Idaho. I've interviewed people in Mississippi, Texas, who all are saying that when they're turned away, there is a realization that abortion and miscarriage treatment is very similar, and it's a way to save the woman's life in a lot of instances, not all, but the procedure is called D&C, and you clear out the uterus, so if you can try again, and she, in fact, wanted this child, that has spurred some men, you know, to really kind of want to learn more about abortion. It was always seen as a woman's issue. They didn't really, they just kind of felt strongly about what their church said or from a moral point of view, but they didn't, from what my interview showed me, see the medical nuances of what abortion means.
877-217-5757. If you'd like to join our conversation with Emily Wax Thibodeau of the Washington Post in our remaining moments. The results of a Washington Post ABC News poll finds that 20% of men are now calling abortion a top voting issue this year. And while it resonates more among Democratic men, with 34% identifying it as one of their most important issues, 15% of both independent and Republican men also say it's one of the single most important issues in their vote, adding to a potential challenge for the GOP ahead of the election 62 days from now. And by comparison, in a 2019, 5 years ago, post-ABC poll, fewer than 10% of men said abortion was a top voting issue. And it is ironic that Donald Trump, the two biggest things he has done in the view of many in his 4 years as president was he was highly responsible for getting a vaccine and now is not taking credit of it for it because of the political implications. And he certainly was responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade and now is not taking credit for it. And the question is, will he be blamed for it? And how much relevance do you think, based on what you're finding? Now, it doesn't really, as far as these feelings about men in red states like Mississippi and Louisiana and Arkansas, they're going for Trump. But is this something that will have relevance in those swing states, Emily?
It could be. We're obviously not sure yet, but it seems like people who are libertarians or who want kind of minimal government out of their doctor's room, just based on the fact that these laws get between your personal life, into your bedroom, into your how you take care of yourself, how you build a family. The proposal against not having IVF was very unpopular, and that alongside the abortion issue, where some states like Kansas, you know, may not view it as a place for the government to be involved in. So it could be a important question to a lot of voters in swing states, I would think.
877-217-5757 is your number. James in Longview, Texas. You're on with Emily Wax Thibodeau of the Washington Post. Hi, James.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Emily. I just want to ask you, do you think that the influence of the Catholic bishops toward abortion is waning a bit as compared to what it used to be?
I'm not sure. Hi, James. Thanks for calling. I'm not sure where that is. I haven't reported on it, so I wouldn't really have an
informed
answer.
Well, Catholics, as we know, have differing points of view on abortion, and I heard Nancy Pelosi recently say, I don't care what bishops think, I care what God thinks. And that's something that some of us who are in that faith also adhere to. But you note, speaking of Texas and our friend James in Longview, that a Texas radio DJ, Ryan Hamilton, detailed what happened to his wife, Jess, during a prolonged miscarriage at 13 weeks. She was refused treatment, sent home by two Dallas area medical facilities where doctors cited the state's abortion restrictions. She ended up bleeding heavily for more than 24 hours and lost consciousness on their bathroom floor. And until then, Hamilton says, abortion care was not on my radar. And you note that he now encourages other men to tell their stories. So this is an issue now that people are being affected by. And long term, it does appear that it is swinging as a political weapon for the left. And it's sad when you have to use something this personal as a political weapon, but elections have consequences, as we know. And if Donald Trump's president, if Kamala Harris is president, there are any number of consequences on any number of issues, including this one, Emily.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. And I also think that Ryan Hamilton speaking out in Texas kind of spurred a lot of other men to jump on, and he now has a podcast called Correct, which he hosts all kinds of people, men included, to get into the conversation and to think about it a little more deeply than they might have before. Mm-hmm. So that's been, I think Thomas Stovall, also the man I interviewed, you know, has connected with Ryan, and it's sort of a safe space for men to talk about this wherever you are on the side of the issue, confused, yes, no, somewhere in the middle. It's a complicated issue. Abortion.
It is, and a listener correctly notes that the 15% of independents and Republicans who say this is an important issue to them, they could be pro-life, and that is true. That is true. John in South Baton Rouge. Yes. John, you're on with Emily. Please be concise. We're short.
Yeah,
go.
I want to make the point that the progressives had no problem getting between women and their doctor on the issue of the COVID vaccine, where the doctors could not speak out, where their doctors could not prescribe what they thought was best. Do you remember that, Emily?
Well, I don't know that that's analogous, but that is the mantra from people on the right side of the spectrum, and I'm sure you've heard similar sentiments, Emily.
Yes, during interviews, for sure.
Sure. And John, thank you for calling. We like people to express their points of view, but that one I think is an apples and oranges thing, but you obviously disagree. But Emily, thanks for your good work. Hopefully this is the first of a few times we'll talk with you, and it's nice to meet you in this realm. And Emily has a story about how abortion is playing in red states among men. And keep up your good work. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
You too. And we're back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay safe. And stay tuned.